Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Good Monday morning to you. Thanks to our guests so far. We talked to Todd Lebo and CJ Moore from The Athletic. Now let's talk to Jarrett Sutton, NBA scout for the New Orleans Pelicans and college basketball insider, former Mizzou Tiger. What's up, man? How you doing?
What's up, fellas? How are we doing? Happy Monday.
I've got a good question for you.
Okay.
So people are accusing Gabe DeArmond and Power Mizzou, asking if it's a April Fool's joke, and he says no, so I can... Knowing Gabe's hatred for April Fools, I'm going to guess he's not partaking in the festivities. And so, I promise I'm not being a smartass. I'm just asking the question. All right. Since it's a big day for women's basketball, I'll ask you a women's basketball question. So going into this season, it was. I think pretty well known that Desiree Reed Francois had informed Robin Pinchton that okay, they know what they have to do in this year to keep their jobs or whatever, because there was thought that maybe they were going to be out last year. And they had this meeting and they even the women's coaches said we know what the expectations are, what we have to do, right?
Right.
Whatever the expectations were making the tournament, they couldn't possibly have met them. They were 11-19 and then 2-14 in the conference. But DRF left and went to Arizona. And so Power Mizzou tweeted out about half an hour ago, multiple sources have told us Mizzou has made the decision to retain women's basketball coach Robin Pinchton for next season. There's been no word from the school or athletic department since the end of the season. How do you do that? Before you've hired the AD, wouldn't you like the AD to make that decision? Or am I crazy here? Or explain, please.
Yeah, it's a little surprising. First off, I know how much Gabe loves April Fool's, jokes. So I know he's probably,
he's already super pissy.
I'm sure his
like at 5 a.m. he tweeted, all days on the SAP are bad. Today will be worse than most. So,
yeah. He's fantastic. Yeah, I'm assuming his sources are strong in terms of, retaining Robin. I'm not, I guess, all that surprised just with everything going on with the AD search that I think is still ongoing. I'd rather hear something about that. I feel like this is kind of a timing thing, and know it was made of everything that took place last year with the women's program, and obviously this year was a real big step back for the program. Robin's been there for many years. I called a lot of those women's games during the kind of the glory run of Robin's tenure with Sophie in that group, and that was kind of when they were really, their strongest. And since Sophie's left, and Asia Blackwell was a big sign that they had when Sophie left. And then when she transferred, it just kind of feels like things have, started to take a shift. And obviously, everything going on now with Portal and, I think Robin's probably feeling that as well. So we'll see what happens. But I think it's more, for me at least, everything going on with the AD search, because it should be the new AD to make that decision.
Yeah, they should hire one. They should hire an AD.
I think that's probably a good call.
Is this going longer than you thought?
Yeah. Yeah, I think so. And for those that I know in Columbia and a couple that work for the Athletic Fire, I think they're kind of a little bit surprised as well of, what's going on. But I know there's a lot going on with the tournament and, those type of things. But, it's definitely gone on longer than I expected, anticipated.
Okay, so let's continue to highlight women's basketball. We were talking about good news and bad news with what's going on in sports right now around here. Anyone watching basketball in the nation, especially if you have, we sit here. Nate was the color commentator or the play-by-play man for KU women's basketball for how long?
14 years.
27 years. Jared Sutton, you called many games for the Missouri women's basketball program, right?
Yep.
I Stephen Davis and I colored, or I was a color commentator, and we called a whole bunch of games for UMKC women's basketball. And then, you know, my daughters have played basketball most of their lives, and one of my daughters is still plays basketball in high school, and the other one's one of the team managers. And I coached them in basketball. So I love basketball. I love women's basketball. I love it all. This is a banner day. This is a huge day for not just people that have supported women's basketball or been involved in women's basketball, just if you like basketball. You can't ask for something better than this. You have a doubleheader. Yeah, and by the way, Iowa and LSU will be right here at 6 o'clock on Sports Radio 810 WHB. So if you're not home and if you're driving around, you can listen to the game right here on 810. You have this doubleheader which features the rematch of the national championship game between LSU and Iowa. So on one side, you've got Kim Mulkey, you got Angel Reese, you got, yes, Jake, Haley Van Lith, HVL, and you've got the defending champs. And then on the other side, you've got Caitlin Clark, who has done things we've never seen before, and Iowa trying to avenge last year's national championship loss. And depending on who you ask, Caitlin Clark's either a hero or a villain. Angel Reese, same thing. Kim Mulkey, same deal there. It's wild and it's crazy. And then right after that, you have a matchup between Paige Beckers, one of the best college basketball players in the nation, Gino Auriemma, the greatest women's coach of all time, oh, by the way, against USC, the number one seed, and Juju Watkins, who's averaging 27 points a game, and you've been singing her praises. All tonight, back-to-back, you tell me, man, you love basketball more than anyone that I know. How awesome is this?
Oh, it's great. I mean, you're talking about four. You just listed all four of those schools and the names associated with those, whether it be players or coaches. I mean, this is an Elite Eight matchup, you know. Like, that's what's so cool about it. We're not just talking about one team. We're not just talking about one coach. We're not just talking about one player. And I think that speaks to the growth of the women's game. That's what should be celebrated, is where the women's game is at, the players that are associated with that, how talented these women are that are playing in these games. I had a chance to watch a little of that Iowa game, I believe it was on Saturday, and just, like, watching Caitlin just carve up a defense is so fun to watch. And then you watch Juju Watkins, who's at USC, who's chasing the freshman record that Caitlin set, and she'll probably break it. And Juju is a problem and such a lethal dynamic scorer, and she's a freshman. So just where the game is at and where it's going, it's in great hands. And just these matchups are going to be fun to watch tonight. And especially just there's definitely some hostility with some of these matchups for sure. The rematch of the national championship game between Iowa and LSU, can't wait for that one. You know, Angel Reese is so good. She's highly competitive. And we've seen Caitlin's competitiveness too. You know, I think she's been very much more animated, I guess, than I've seen her because I think there's just so much pressure on her. And, you know, she's facing the weight of the world a little bit, knowing it's her last year at Iowa. She signed up for that. You know, she made the decision that she's going to move on after this year. And just, I think there's a lot of pressure on her, and she's delivered, and her teammates have delivered too. But this is going to be such a fun matchup. I mean, two school, LSU 31 wins, Iowa 32 wins. They've been great all year. So that matchup's going to be a blast. And then you're talking about Gino and the UConn program, the history of that program, you know, going up against the one seed, and it's flipped. UConn is not the one, and we're so used to seeing UConn as the one. They're the three now. And, man, I mean, Paige Beckers and Juju, they are two talented players. I know it's not just about the individual talents that are going to be on the fourth. It's team game. Both these teams are very good. UConn's a 32-win team, and they're slightly, you know, as the three, a little bit of a dog, but we know it's UConn, and this should be a really fun matchup as well. So two just high level games.
UConn's actually, are they favored, Jake? Vegas has UConn favored, which says something about when a number one seed is not favored in the Elite Eight. And also, I will mention both games, both of them, right here on Sports Radio 810. That's one of my favorite things about Sports Radio 810. Chad Boger and Jason Justice, if there's big games nationally, right, that everyone's talking about, the home for those games right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB, LSU and Iowa, followed by UConn, USC, tonight right here on Sports Radio 810. Nate Bucchetti, and yes, 3.5-point favorites right now. UConn, 3.5-point favorites over the one-seed USC. Nate.
So the thing that I love about this, like I was having a good conversation on the phone with one of my buddies yesterday, friends of mine who are grown men who don't even have daughters. So one of my good buddies is, you know, he's got kids, but he doesn't have any daughters, and he's fired up about this game. Iowa versus LSU. We're talking about how great the drama is. And one of the things we're talking about is, like, what makes for this great story is, at least last year, it seemed the perception, my feeling watching the game was, Caitlin Clark has some decent teammates, but she is not surrounded by the kind of talent that LSU has across the board. That maybe the best player's on the Iowa side, but the best team is on the other side. Has that changed much from last year to this year, Jarrett? Like, is that still the narrative going into the game tonight?
Yeah, absolutely. And LSU, I mean, it's not just Angel Reese. It's, you know, they got, like, athleticism. Anisha Moreau, who's a guard, she's very athletic. She can kind of be disruptive as a guard. Same with, I think it's Elijah Johnson. It's another really good guard, really good scorer. And she rebounds really well. She plays pretty much every minute for LSU. They only play seven. Like, LSU's not really, like, a deep team in terms of how many players they'll put out on the floor. But it is still a very similar matchup in terms of, you know, again, it's going to be a lot of Caitlin having to do a lot in terms of playmaking, scoring. To have 29 points, 15 assists in the previous game, she had 6 rebounds, and she was very efficient from the field. Didn't shoot it all that well, but and just watching the game, like you can look at a box score, but just watching the game, she draws so much pressure. She draws a ton of contact. She's trying to isolate and do things off the dribble in space. She's trying to play in the pick and roll. And her IQ is just so advanced. So the thing about LSU is they have size and they're a very athletic group that they put out on the floor. Not taking anything away from Iowa. I was more specialist. Caitlin can really penetrate. And then there's shooting around Caitlin. Gabby Marshall's a really good shooter. She's a senior. She shoots the ball really well. She's been around. And then Kate Martin is a senior as well. So the thing that Iowa, I think, has going for them a little bit is just their experience. They're older. And I also think that's kind of similar to maybe why Caitlin kind of made the decision, too, is going out with some of these seniors that she's played with for many years. I think is a little bit of part of her decision that she made a few weeks back. So very similar matchup. I do give, you know, Iowa's got just the experience factor, too, a little bit. LSU lost a few players from last year, so part of the matchup, but a little different there from both teams.
All right, so that sets you up for tonight's doubleheader. You can hear it right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. We have the Final Four set, and again, it just looks like UConn and everyone else, although hopefully if the national championship game ends up UConn and Purdue, we'll see a good matchup, but UConn is winning their games by an average of almost 28 points in this tournament. They've won 10 straight tournament games by double digits, and they had a 30-0 run that put away Illinois, which is unthinkable. And so is this where we're headed? Again, just UConn, another weekend of domination by UConn, and they'll win the championship, or do you think anyone stops them?
Yeah, it's a magic question. I mean, what they did against Illinois, and I thought Illinois was going to be the first game that they might have a game, just because of Illinois' offense, the level that Terrence Shannon was playing at. And Illinois was, you know, playing with a ton of confidence and shooting the ball well and just looked like a force of a team that could hang with UConn maybe from a toughness factor. Coleman Hawkins is a space five. And what UConn did, and much is made of, you know, their offense, they're a good offensive team. They got a lot of talent. They got skill. They have depth. They have size. But I thought their defense in the second half particularly just locked down. And Illinois really couldn't do much with that. In terms of, like, the percentages and the efficiency, like, Illinois shot the ball 25% from the field and 26% from three. I just thought UConn's defense, both interior-wise and on the perimeter, was solid. They're not just an offensive team. Like they're great on both ends of the floor. Their attention to detail is so high. Donovan Queen is playing the best we've seen Donovan. He had some injury issues throughout, you know, these last couple of years, particularly beginning of the season, had some injury issues going on. He looks fully healthy. And then the guard play, like Stephon Castle, the freshman, didn't play that well against Illinois, but he is a big-time talent. And then they got Tristan Newton and Cam Spencer and some of these older, experienced players that just know how to win. And that, to me, is why UConn is so dangerous. You know, I think with the matchup that's coming up with Alabama, Alabama's got to make shots. Alabama has been susceptible to giving up a lot of points. I do like the UConn-Purdue matchup. Like, that's what I'm hoping for a title game. But I wouldn't overlook NC State either. You know, I think they're on a serious run. Here we are, another 11 seed in the Final Four, which is great for the tournament. But in terms of who can give UConn a game, I put Purdue in this conversation, and that's kind of what I'm hoping for. Donovan Klingon versus Zach Edey would be a blast. And then, you know, Cam Spencer as a point guard, that type of matchup at the guard position, and just what Purdue has with Braden Smith, who's a very good pass-first point guard who could do a lot of things. And then Fletcher Lawyer is a big-time shooter. But it all comes back to Zach Edey and just the dominance that he has played with for Purdue in this tournament. So that's hopefully what we're seeing in a title game come Monday.
These seven-footers that are staying in college because maybe they're not as big a prospects as they used to be because the NBA game has evolved so much is kind of interesting, isn't it? How do you see that evolution of the college game being affected by it?
Yeah, so I think it starts, you know, Nate, we talked about player development last week, and I think what's great about Zach Edey, I know he's an older player and he's been in college now for quite a while, but I do think it's an underrated aspect of just Zach and Coach Painter and the development of Zach over the years. Like, Zach was pretty raw at IMG. I remember seeing him in high school. He was a three-star out of Canada. I don't remember him being, like, on any top rankings. Like, he was a tall, you know, big kid in high school. He had touch. He wasn't, you know, as strong as he is now. But to put up 40 in an Elite Eight game, and Zach didn't really shoot the ball well at the free throw line. Like, Zach could have had 45-plus last night. I think it speaks to just how much better Zach has continued to evolve. Like, 2 years ago, you know, Zach was probably looked at as a slow-footed big that would struggle in an NBA game defensively. And now you see him, and, you know, he is not a crazy, explosive, you know, mobile, athletic big man that is what would fit in a modern-day game. And the NBA game is so different than college. They're not the same. Spacing, pace, size, athleticism, skill. The NBA level, it's so different. It's a global game, and the NBA game, the talent level, skill level, five guys that can play on the perimeter, and you have to have defenders. So much of made of the NBA game, like, you have to be able to guard, and sometimes that exposes bigs that can't move all that well, that, especially from, like, a hip mobility and the footwork piece. Like, Zach in a ball screen in the NBA level probably 2 years ago probably couldn't do it. Now, like, Zach is a very, very intelligent player and knows how to use his body. He gets wide, he gets in a stance, and at his size, at 7'4", like, he can use angles pretty well, and he can use his size to alter shots, not just block shots. Donovan Klingon is a little bit different because, you know, I think Donovan is he's high motor. Like, Zach's skill level has come a long way. Donovan's younger. Donovan is a skilled big. He's probably not to the level Zach is, honestly. Zach's skill level has come a long way over time, and it speaks to Zach's work ethic and his compete level. You know, thinking through, like, the years I've seen Zach, even at a Purdue practice with Trevion Williams and Jaden Ivey on that Purdue team, where he was kind of like a third, fourth option, and now he's the guy, and his game has just continued to evolve, and it's what's helped him really kind of uncover some things that are, I think, can stick at the NBA level. Because you do need a big man in the NBA game that is strong and physical and can rebound and can really hold his own as an anchor around the paint. I know a lot will be made of, can he guard on the perimeter and guard on a ball screen? But really, if you can play in it, you know, there's 82 NBA games. There's going to be certain games that fit Zach Edey where he can play 15 to 20 minutes. There's probably games where he won't. He'll be a DNP and not be able to play. But the reality is he's helped himself. And I think Donovan Klingon is another big. Khalil Ware is another big in this draft from Indiana. Yves Missi from Baylor is another big. He's more of a mobile, stretch, like, modern-day big that's raw but very much a developmental big. Zach's probably the most proven, skilled big man that's going to be coming up in the summer's draft. So it's that position is unique because I think it is a little bit changing at the NBA level. We have Jonas Valanciunas in New Orleans, who's a strong, you know, back to the basket, kind of old school big, and he's very productive. He's a double-double waiting to happen. So you have to have guys like that. But we usually rotate Larry Nance in because he's just a mobile, athletic, switchable big, and you have to have that. You have to play multiple ways at the NBA level. And in college, you can probably get away with how Purdue's playing, where they really kind of play one way, but Zach is so dominant that they can get away and win games like that.
UConn wins it all?
I think so. I don't sleep on Purdue. I think they are out to prove something. I think the thought of them losing and being upset and embarrassed in past tournaments is a really showcase in itself. I even think some of these post-game press conferences and some of the video we see in locker rooms where, you know, you win an NCAA tournament game, you're all excited and water is thrown everywhere and your team name's getting plastered to the board and you're advancing. Like, Purdue hasn't really done any of that. They're very much like business trip, business mentality. Like, they want to get to that title game, and they want a chance at UConn. And I'm happy for Coach Painter, too. He's a great coach who's taken a lot of slack and a lot of heat from things that have gone wrong in the tournament, and here they are. And they've had a great season. They're 33-4. And the Big Ten, you know, it was a solid league, and they've been dominant for 2 years now. But I think they know all along they were going to be judged by what they did in this tournament. And they fulfilled that. And Zach's played at such a high level, All-American level.
Final question for you. Who is the top NBA prospect that will play in the Final Four?
I think when you look at, both games, really, like, Donovan Klingon would be in this conversation. Stephon Castle would be in this conversation. I would probably think Klingon would probably be the top prospect just because he is young, he is mobile. He is a true seven-footer. There was a lot made of him last year and just what he was able to showcase as a young freshman. So much about the top of the draft is young guys that maybe show some skill that have, you know, a projection where they can develop, and there's more to them maybe down the road once they get into an NBA game, into an NBA development program. But I would say Stephon Castle would be another one of those. Very good athlete, kind of a combo guard, wing that is a good defender, good passer, a young player, young prospect. He was hurt at the beginning of the year. He's played his best basketball in the tournament, I think, as well. Wasn't that great on Saturday? Yeah. But I think, like, his games that he's played in the tournament have really showcased what we thought he could be. Really wasn't playing that well through Big East play. And then Zach Edey would be in this conversation too. There's more to come here in terms of after these games, once we get into the combine, once we get to workouts, like, that, this could change. But I would say those three are probably your top prospects, but Donovan Klingon probably has the edge over the three right now.
All right, my man. Thank you for all the good information. We appreciate it. We'll talk to you again soon, Jarrett.
All right. Thanks, guys. Have a good week.
That's Mr. Basketball, Jarrett Sutton. We'll be right back after this on WHP. Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810. WHB, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it. It's Monday, April 1st. You thought you could hear that whole song? Nope, fooled you.
Psych.
Got him.
Not.
Still no update on the Rashee Rice story. So
as far as we know, the authorities are reportedly still searching for him?
No idea, bro. We will, as soon as we hear something, we'll let you know. We do know that the Royals won in impressive fashion yesterday, 11-0 over the Minnesota Twins. Also, we'd like to announce that Gary Dieter, according to his text messages, back on the Alabama bandwagon, where he actually went to school after Creighton failed him, and he let us know that he's back on the Bama bandwagon by texting us that he don't give a piss about nothing but the Tide.
Nothing but the Tide. You gotta get that as a line. Nothing but the Tide.
So there it is. So Gary Dieter back where he belongs, Alabama, and he said that can't wait to get a piece of Anthony Sherman's UConn Huskies. So that's very good. We have a Dieter versus Sherm Final Four matchup with Alabama versus UConn. But anyway, just updating you there. Yesterday, the Royals won 10-0, and they hit 5 home runs. Bobby Witt had a hell of a game. Salvi was good. Velasquez was good. But the most impressive performance yesterday belonged to Brady Singer, who went 7 strong innings. He looked terrific. Clearly didn't give up any runs. Had 10 strikeouts in his 7 innings. And only gave up 3 hits and a walk. So here, 98 pitches through his 7 innings. Here is Brady Singer after that terrific performance.
Yeah, I mean, offense was incredible, you know, today. Obviously, 10 runs makes it, you know, a little bit easier to be in the zone and trust yourself. So, you know, they obviously helped me out a lot, and that was a heck of a first win there for us.
What did you think of just the lineup overall, getting out to a really quick start like that?
Yeah, no, they put together some really, really good at-bats, and, you know, Salvi coming in there with the homer sets a tone. I mean, this offense is really, really good, really incredible. So that just shows what we can do.
How'd you feel about your slider and sinker today?
Yeah, both felt really good. You know, I was able to, you know, use all the pitches. I think I was, you know, staying in zone mostly was the biggest thing, and trusting my stuff in the zone. You know, that everything had, you know, good movement to it, and, you know, it was where I wanted to.
How much did that swing and miss help you be more efficient and get those innings?
Yeah, I think that's just kind of, you know, having more pitches, you know, I'm able to, you know, see different swing and miss. You know, obviously not as easy to guess there. So having the sinker and the four seam, you know, able to work, you know, be able to go back and forth with them, and then the 2 different sliders, you know, just seeing some different swings on guys.
Yeah,
used quite a bit of four seams, quite a bit of two seams, and, you know, both sliders. I was able to, you know, mix those in a lot. I mean, either way, it's been playing good down in the zone and up in the zone, so I'm able to kind of use it up and down, you know, kind of go north-south and, you know, use the sinker in there too.
How important was it for you to get off to a great start this season with a 3-hit performance?
Yeah, no, that was definitely helpful. You know, I'm happy with that right there, and, you know, I think just staying in the zone is something I'm going to try to, you know, be more of, is, you know, compete with these guys and trust my stuff.
Keeping with the offense stacking on as many runs as they did, for you to continues to stay locked in, go out there and throw up zeros, what's that?
Yeah, that's something, you know, I've learned, you know, over my career, is, you know, not slow down, you know, not take off intensity even though you get a 10-run lead. So, you know, that was something that I told myself early in the game when we got all those runs. So, you know, I was happy with that.
How much did it mean to you to follow Cole and Seth and Nick Tina to get a strong start as well?
Yeah, no, that was awesome, you know, to watch Cole go out there and do his thing, and, you know, Seth, you know, with his sliders, and he's throwing a sinker and a forcing too, you know, and helped me out with a really good game plan for these guys as well. So, no, that was really fun to watch those guys compete.
Does it feed off on you when you see those 2 settings on like that?
Yeah, I don't want to be the guy that sucks there. No, they set the tone on those first 2 games. They did incredible, and, you know, I definitely wanted to go out there and, you know, compete with those guys and, you know, put 3 consecutive good starts together, and, you know, I'm going to watch Walker tomorrow as well.
What part of your foot did that last ball catch?
All of my little toes. I didn't feel it until I got in a dugout, so, you know, it was a good kick by me right to Sal, so it was good. Yeah, right. It's kick safe.
Thankfully, it didn't do anything worse, so.
Kick save and a beauty.
You know? Don't need that. Don't need any broken toes or anything for Brady Singer.
Nope. Don't need that.
We can also, what's that?
Keep him healthy.
Yeah, I don't want to be the guy that sucks there.
Yep. Who does?
Right.
Bobby Witt Jr. went 3-for-5 with 3 runs scored. He had a home run. He also had a single and a triple. Could not come up with a double to hit for the cycle. You want to play Bobby Witt now or break? All right, we'll break. When we come back, we'll hear from Bobby Witt Jr. after his big day out at the K after this on WHB. Welcome back to the show. He had a big day to play yesterday, so let's hear from Bobby Witt Jr. after the Royals beat the Twins 11-0.
Yeah, we knew what we were capable of. We knew this was there. It just had to just kind of click, and Salvi kind of started, got us going. And so it's great to see. Just shows everyone what this offense can do, and it's just kind of getting started.
looking for the double in the last two at-bats?
I didn't want to try to put too much pressure on myself, but I got a couple pitches that I should have hit, and so, yeah.
What do you feel like your swing is at early on in the season as far as just staying in the zone and being ready?
I think it's good. It's solid, and I just got to keep doing it. Keep preparing the way I'm preparing, and just control what I can control, take the pitches that I want to hit at, and just kind of be there and just not really try to do too much, do too little, and just go compete.
What was your vantage point seeing Izzy hit a home run and Michael Gasol right in front of you?
It just not really an advantage, more of just kind of gets you going, gets the juices going, fires you up.
After kind of struggling offensively in the first two, what did it mean to have a big offensive explosion in this one for you?
Yeah, it's huge, and it's just, I think it was everyone had maybe 6-7 at-bats, so it's like, I don't know if you call it really struggling the first two games, just not getting the hits, and so it's just kind of, you can't really control that, so you can control what you can control here, and got some runs on the board, and our pitching is what it is, and so it's going to be a lot of fun this year.
What do you think of today?
It was electric, just him throwing all the pitches, pounding the zone and just kind of dominating, and it was just incredible to see this vintage Brady Singer pitch.
Did it mean something to you guys to really help out your starting pitching after they gave you two cool starts against the last two games?
Yeah, definitely. I even told Brian Sweeney yesterday after the game, I'm like, we'll get you some runs. I promise that. So yeah.
And they did 11 of them. So there you go.
Well, we got a lot done today, didn't we?
Nope.
We covered a lot of topics.
Tonight, the Royals back at it, and hopefully can now start to build a winning streak. Wouldn't that be lovely?
Mm-hmm.
As they go on the road now for the first time this year to take on a very good Baltimore team that's loaded with young talent. They're off to a 2-1 start. Royals plus 130 with Michael Wacha making his Royal debut. He'll face Dean Kramer. So there's your pitching matchup.
Wacha, Wacha.
And a very reasonable 5:35 first pitch, which will lead us into 6 o'clock and the Iowa-LSU game. You can listen to that fantastic women's doubleheader, Iowa-LSU, followed by UConn and USC, both games tonight right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. And the tomorrow vote.
Mm-hmm.
Nate will be doing some man-on-the-street, woman-on-the-street interviews, getting some thoughts of voters as they excitedly exit the polls and walk around. Can't tell you where Nate will be.
I'm going to be on the streets of Overland mm-hmm. Park, so
no.
not a lot of information
no, you won't.
There.
No, you will not. Okay. I'm going to put you right in the middle of Jackson County.
I'll go where I want.
That's not what Jeb Boger said.
Yeah, I don't want to be the guy that sucks there.
That's my motivation right there. Fail regularly.
Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for listening. We appreciate you. Don't fall for any stupid pranks and jokes today. It's April 1st. All right?
Don't believe anything anyone tells you.
That's exactly right. Have a great day on Sports Radio 810 WHB. You're the best.
Yeah, I don't want to be the guy that sucks there.